Welcome to Evolve, Reinventing Leadership, Building Freedom Cultures, with thought leader and award-winning author, Yvette Bethel. This podcast provides you with insights and ideas you can use to reinvent your culture through trust and the principles of interconnectivity, flow, and balance. At a time when the world is rewriting the rules of work, traditional leadership practices are not enough. It's time to perceive persistent challenges through a new lens. It's time to evolve.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again. This is your host, Yvette Bethel, and the topic for this episode of Evolve is, are you a micromanager? And we have with us business owner and award-winning leadership development expert, Summer Davies. As the founder of The Leader Shop, Summer focused on cultivating thriving work environments where people feel equipped, capable, valued, and connected. She believes it's her privilege to coach, teach, and study leaders around the world. And her unique depth and breadth of experience has given her an unending passion for helping managers to bring life to the leaders that they want to be and love. So, hello, Summer, and welcome to Evolve.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's so good to have you. This topic is so spot on for this time and in our lives. I just love the fact that you help people to shift from micromanaging to leading with confidence. And we all have interesting stories that brought us to where we are and what we're interested in. And I'm really curious about what got you started on this journey.
Well, you know, I often answer that question by saying I have an unusual or an unconventional story, but the longer I do this work, the more I find that we all have really surprising twists and turns in our own stories. So maybe I'm not as unconventional as I would like to think that I am. But as a young person, I was very convinced that my future was in the equine industry. I was going to breed and race horses. I'm an equestrian today. I will always have horses in my life. But I got out of college fresh with a degree in equine reproduction. I was really lucky to get a job in the industry. And I figured out really quickly that was not going to be the right long-term profession for me. And so I was kind of just looking around for something that might be a better fit. And by total accident, two things happened that were really important. Number one, I did what, you know, every young person, at least in the United States, does when they're trying to figure out what to do with their life. I got a puppy and I figured that would be a great solution. And I brought my puppy into a veterinary hospital and I did not have a great experience. And that was the second really important thing that happened, because I ended up having a conversation with the person who was leading this group of veterinary hospitals about the experience that I'd had. And he said the very last thing I expected him to say, which was, I totally agree with your perspective on animals and pets and family. I'm looking for people with a similar mindset. Do you want a job? And I just said, yes. So I agreed to this job, not really knowing what I was agreeing to. And I walked in on the first day and it turns out I was going to be the manager, the operations manager of this large veterinary hospital. And I not only had no management experience, I'd also never run an operation of any sort. So I was really unqualified to do the job. And as a result, I was an absolute disaster, just absolute hot mess of a manager. And it was through that experience of seeing the impact it was having on the people around me, I thought I was doing my best. I didn't really have any tools or resources. But it really wasn't a great experience. So I did what you do, and this will date me a little bit. I did what you used to do back then, which is I walked into a brick and mortar bookstore and I just looked for a book that might have the answer, because I just didn't have access to the wealth of information we have now. I picked up a book. It happened to be about leadership development. I read it. It really resonated with me. The principles were making a lot of sense. So I brought the book back to my team. I held a team meeting and I said, look, I know things aren't going well here. I'm pretty sure the problem is me. And I'm really committed to trying to fix it. I've bought this book. I'd like to share with you what I find in it and see if we can make things better here. And that was really hard. I'm still really proud of myself for having done that so many years ago. But it worked, and it helped me start to learn what skills I needed to be able to effectively lead a team, especially a team of people doing something like veterinary medicine that I had no business doing, and turn that into a successful enterprise. Luckily, that particular veterinary hospital was acquired by a very large multinational organization called Mars. They also make candy and food products. So depending on the part of the world you're in, you may know them. Mm-hmm. And that gave me an avenue to grow into the profession of leadership development, end up getting my master's degree, and then moving into a role that allowed me to study and support and work with leaders all over the world. So I spent the next 15 years of my career working in leadership development across every continent except for Antarctica, working with leaders in many different cultures and many different levels within the organization. And that gave me a bit of a window to the many challenges leaders have and the similarities I was noticing that leaders were facing. And it was just a wonderful experience. And so I've now moved into my own practice, which allows me to work a little bit more closely and specifically in the slice of leadership that I get the most excited about. So that's how I ended up here.
It seems to me that micromanaging has become almost an epidemic. From your perspective, what exactly is a micromanager? Like, how can people recognize that they may be one?
Yeah, I think that you are absolutely right. There's a bit of an epidemic of micromanagement, and it's hidden a little bit because sometimes we don't notice it in others or in ourselves as quickly as we might like to. And that allows it to become quite pervasive within organizations. The thing I like to say about micromanagers that's really, really important is almost all the micromanagers that I have encountered, which is many, are well-intended. And what we're seeing is an excess of good intention gone bad. And that's becoming micromanagement. And I think that that's important to call out because it could be easy to assume that these people are mean or uncaring or unself-aware, and many of those things are in fact not true. What happens often is individuals are promoted to leadership because they were the best individual contributor, and their skills allowed them to demonstrate high potential. And then they move into the leadership role, whether it's, you know, a small team, big team, whatever. And most often, they're not given that foundational skill development at that moment that they're transitioning into a new role to allow them to be able to demonstrate the new skills of being a manager, which are in all probability totally different from the skills that they needed to be a high-performing individual contributor. So they're left trying to figure out how to lead a group of people, do the best by their team, and what they know is that individual contributor skill. So they overflex in guiding, directing, structuring for the people on their team because they're trying to help. And in fact, that's causing this micromanagement experience when they're not able to then lean into skills like coaching, mentoring, prioritizing, delegating, all those things that can come together to create really effective leadership behavior. So often it is because you've got a really well-intended person who doesn't have the foundational skills to be an effective leader.
You know, that makes sense because even with business owners, I see the same pattern where when they started the company, they needed to micromanage because, you know, they were doing almost everything. And then as it grows, the same skill set, they apply to a growing and expanding organization. And from your experience, what's going on in cases like that? Because oftentimes they can't, it becomes a blind spot where they can't really see, even though they may make attempts to release, it's their baby, this is their company. So how do they manage that?
Oh, and I, you know, I see this often when I'm working with small business owners who are going from being a small solopreneur type of experience to a growing and thriving business, which has been the goal all along, right? But when they reflect on the early days of their experience, getting their business up and going off the ground, I had a manager share a story with me. She said, you know, I remember 2 or 3 years ago when I was just starting my business and I was filling out the forms to work with my vendors. And the form said, okay, who do I call for the marketing department? She said, well, that's me. Who do I call for the accounting department? Me. Who do I call for the shipping department?
Me.
Again, me. I'm the everything department. I'm the up late at night. I'm the working on the weekends. I'm the one putting my blood, sweat, and tears to get this thing up off the ground. And I've done it all for so long. And now my business is to this state that I need to bring in some people to help. And my way has always been just the only way because I was it, right? And having, it's not the intentionality or the desire. It's the skill to be able to say, okay, how do I now say this person can step in and they may have a different vision on how to get things done, which might be better than mine. And that's hard because I'm the one who's gotten it here. And so having, especially if you're a small business owner on your own, having the courage and the skills together to be able to make that step can be incredibly challenging. And then what we start to see is those managers who, or those small business owners who don't acquire those skills, see that in the early days of growing their business beyond a solo experience, have incredibly high turnover because they don't know how to build and retain a team. Yeah. And then that becomes a new and frustrating experience for those well-intended business owners.
You know, there's something that I see where some business owners try to make the change. And on the surface, some changes happened, but the intentions and the fears are still present. And so underneath it all, the same drivers are still in place. So on the surface, they believe that they made the change, but it's not manifesting in the way that they are thinking it is. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, and this is the imperative of the feedback loop, especially in small business, but I would also say it's very important in large scale businesses, if you work for a corporation, whatever the case might be. Often our experience is coming to us through multiple filters, right? Mm-hmm. What we see, our own interpretation of that, the one side of our experience. And if you haven't intentionally built in that feedback loop, it can become incredibly difficult to understand the experience of others around you. And so again, coming back to that experience of a small business owner, that's never been important because you've been it, right? And then having the courage to say, okay, I'm going to bring people in and then try to find some mechanisms to encourage and ask for feedback so that I can understand, are my intentions matching the impact that I'm actually having?
Right.
I've got to have the courage to ask for that. And you may have been somebody who's been wildly courageous in starting your own business or jumping into a new senior leadership role in an organization or something else courageous and successful there. And yet you still got to summon that additional courage to ask for the feedback and maybe partner with a coach or a mentor or another manager to help you with the mechanism of the feedback. Because sometimes what we see managers do, what I see managers do, is they'll say, well, I tell my team, my door's always open. Come give me feedback. Hmm. That's not the same as building in an intentional feedback loop. Because if the feedback is, hey, your management style isn't working for me, that might be really hard to walk in and say that for your team if they haven't built that long-term relationship with you. So you've got to build in some structural mechanism to do that. And there's tons of tools to do it, but it takes a little bit of extra effort in order to get there.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of businesses don't really care about micromanagement because it gets results. They can have what you call regard as high performing teams. So why should they? You know, that's sometimes the question that I get asked, why should they if it's not broken?
So there's two reasons. The first reason is about sustainability. So to your point, if it's not broken today, that doesn't mean it will not break in the future. And there's two stories that I really like to use about this particular instance. The one is NASA. So if you are my age or a little bit older, you will remember that in the early 80s, there was a rocket that was going to go up into space. NASA was very, very excited about it. It was live televised. And when it took off, just a few moments after launch, the whole thing exploded, killed everyone on board on live TV. An unmitigated disaster for NASA. Now, I point to that story because the teams that built that rocket knew it was going to explode weeks and months before it did. There was no mechanism built in to enable the individuals on the teams to raise the concern and stop the launch. Wow. So they knew it was going to happen, and they had known for some time, but couldn't stop it. That up until that moment, people would have described NASA as incredibly successful, right? We were the first ones to the moon. We were killing it in the space race. And so they were successful until they weren't. And that lack of attention to the micromanagement, to the systemic barriers, caused the problem. We're seeing a similar replication of behavior in Boeing. The people who worked at Boeing knew that those doors that have recently flown off the planes were coming off. They knew. They knew that there were systemic problems on the assembly floor. And because they hadn't addressed the lack of feedback loop within their teams, they were successful until they weren't. And so what I caution folks to say is, you may be successful until you're not. And your challenge or disaster is hiding somewhere in your organization. And better yet, the people who work there know about it. So finding a way to get ahead of it to ensure that sustainability of success, that's where it's critical. And those stories are scary. And I hope that no one listening to this ever has a disaster of that magnitude. Mm-hmm. And yet, those are two great organizations to look at and say, sure, absolutely successful until they weren't. So that's the first one. The second one is really more around innovation. And this is where I get so excited. So in the last four or five years, there was a huge uptick in conversation around diversity, equity, and inclusion. Lots of organizations leaned into initiatives, especially during COVID and just right after COVID times, and talked a lot about how excited they were to focus on this. Really great, great point. And yet the value of all of those efforts is to increase the diversity of thought in the room. That's the ultimate output, is how do we get more ideas, different perspectives in the room so mm-hmm. that we can drive innovation and productivity. That's the so that, right? And when you have a micromanager in the room, you are absolutely guaranteed to shut down all diversity of thought. So even if you've done amazing work to create diverse teams with a variety of opinions and perspectives, when you have a micromanager, it instantly kills all the positive benefits of that. And then all of that great work is for naught, right? And you lose the ability to lean into that innovation and productivity. And so for those two reasons, it's absolutely imperative for all teams to address this.
Yeah, you said something quite powerful there. You may be successful until you're not. Very powerful and something that we all should keep in mind. This is your host, Yvette Bethel, and we'll take a break here and be back after this message.
Organizational Soul is a mission-driven organization and network where we specialize in trust in academia, families, and organizations. We are building a community of leaders who are interested in trust and culture. If you are interested in our updates, you can sign up for our newsletter at orgsoul.com. As a thank you for joining our community, you can access our free resources that are designed to help you build your brand as a trusted leader as you contribute to safe space. Sign up now at orgsoul.com.
Welcome back to Evolve. Our guest is business owner and award-winning leadership expert, Summer Davies. Welcome back, Summer.
Thank you.
And the next question I have for you is, when When leaders are thinking about shifting their behaviors from micromanaging to leading, what's one of the toughest habits to overcome?
One of the places I start when I'm working with somebody who said, hey, I think this might be something I want to work on, is prioritization and delegation. This skill is one of the most challenging for almost everyone. And when folks hear that, and as your listeners are hearing that, they might say, I'm a great prioritizer. That's how I've become so productive. And yet the skill of prioritizing for yourself is different from the skill of being able to say, here are the organizational priorities in whatever context you might be in. Now, how do I prioritize for others so that I can define an ideal outcome and say, this is where we're trying to get. So whatever your business is, if you're in marketing and you're trying to get more clicks, or if you sell blinds and you're trying to sell more blinds and you say, we want to get to where we sell this number, right? Can you say, this is the organizational outcome priority that I want? I am okay with the definition of how we get there being different from how I might do it. Mm-hmm. That's where the struggle can come in, especially if we think back to those solopreneurs who said, look, I've driven this business to this point, and the way I get more sales, more clicks, more customers, whatever it is you're trying to get, has been X, Y, and Z. And now you bring somebody onto the team and say, I'd like to get to this metric. I'm okay if the way we get there is A, B, C, D, or 1, 2, 3, 4, something I could never have thought of. So being able to get a little bit comfortable in this, the how being different than what you might have envisioned, that's step one of stepping away from that micromanagement. And then the step two is, how am I involved? Having that be a collaborative discussion with the person you're delegating work to say, what is it that you need from me? Do you need a daily check-in? Because this is something you've never done before. You need a lot of support. Do you just need me to step back and get out of the way? Do you need me to go get you some materials and resources to be able to do this in the way you need to do it? Allowing that to be a collaborative decision in which you are not necessarily the decision maker to say what that's going to look like. That can be a challenge, not only because we want to make space for others, but it may not be a conversation you've had before. So you may not know, what are those conversation starters? What are those questions I can ask to unlock the true need for that person? That can be where the skill building comes in. Really, really important for folks who are making that transition.
You address the what they can do from a supervisory / organizational, getting organized kind of perspective. But what can they do with regard to their belief systems? Because some managers feel that this is right.
Yeah, I think this is one of those important points to get into the mindset of, what is my role here? So one of the questions that I often ask when I'm working with new managers is, how did you add value in the past? Let's get clear about that. Let's write it down and validate that you added value in these ways. Now, in this capacity, how do you add value? And helping them compare and contrast those two lists or ideas of how they add value, so they can see, if I was previously the doer and the doer of all the things, now my job is to empower, guide, coach the person who is doing, and help them say, okay, let me reframe the way I am going to add value in this conversation to this individual. That may mean I need to shift the types of questions I ask, the way I ask them, some of those types of things. So just that definition of what is the value that I add here can really help somebody say, okay, I need to take a step back and say, I no longer add value by organizing the warehouse. That's not where I add value. I've got somebody who does that. I need to add value by making sure that they have what they need to be able to organize the warehouse, and then maybe do some other tasks that I wasn't doing previously.
You know, I've worked with multiple business owners in different countries. And we talked about blind spots earlier. I think this question has to do with, because a lot, like I said earlier, a lot of times people feel like they are doing things differently, but their filter isn't quite hasn't quite changed. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, the first step is, you know, kind of getting beyond the blind spot, but how do they hold themselves accountable as well to the new behaviors? What mm-hmm. have you seen, or what are some of the best practices you've come across?
The hardest and the most effective is transparency. So if you have a manager who has the courage to say to someone or to their team, hey, look, I'm working on my own leadership skills. These are, you know, I'm working on my prioritization. I'm working on the way I give feedback. I'm working on the way I coach, whatever is true for them. If you have a manager who's willing to be transparent with their team and then ask for that accountability and say, guys, this is a new skill for me. I may not be perfect at it. I want you to hold me accountable. Now, that is a perfect case scenario. If you've got a manager who's built that trust or is willing to be courageous in that way, they may not be there yet. So if you've got a newer manager or there's something, some dynamic going on that won't allow for that, that's okay. They still need to find an accountability partner in some way. So maybe that's a peer that they can share that with. Maybe that's a manager or someone else in their work environment that they can share that with. In the event that that person doesn't exist, that's where bringing in a brilliant coach to help you have that third party outside of your organization perspective can be really helpful. So that can look a lot of different ways, but I do think having a human being as your accountability partner is really critical. First choice is your team. There's some other options if you can't get there. There's also some great mechanisms to do this. So I have a micromanager assessment on my website that I offer. It's totally free. People can use it if they want to hold themselves accountable and assess. There's also some great resources just out there available to allow you to request feedback from your team, request input from the folks around you in a way that's less personal than, hey, you can come to me and talk to me. So finding one of those mechanisms or creating one of those mechanisms so that you have the opportunity for people to give feedback. It's just a really powerful and intentional way to hold yourself accountable to the behavior change and to opening up to that feedback. So you can see, again, is my intention meeting my impact?
You know, sometimes I come across people who have really good, from their perspectives, good justifications for the micromanaging. Oh, but you know, I need it done right away. And you know, everything they say is probably true.
Absolutely.
And they dig their heels in. Like, what do you do when they know that they need to change, but you know, they kind of hang on because they don't want to take the risk, you know?
I do know this. And I will go back to what I said at the very beginning, which is the majority of the people that present as a micromanager have an excess of good intention. One of the managers I use as an example often in coaching is Michael Scott. So for American audiences, this is the manager from The Office. And he's just such a beautiful example, because if you're familiar with the show, what you'll know is he is the worst manager ever. He's horrible. He has a horrible impact on his team. The productivity is terrible because of it, right? It causes all sorts of problems for his organization. And at the same time, he is one of the best intended people you've ever met. He really wants to be a good manager. And more importantly, he thinks he is. So he's a great mirror for some folks to say, okay, there's an example of somebody who's not malicious. He doesn't have bad intent. He's just not able to connect his intention with his impact. And when you have folks who say, yes, they know I need to take a change, and then they immediately follow that with, but this task was so urgent, but this person doesn't have the skill set, and this, and that, and this, what you know is there's something additional that needs to happen here in order to encourage that person to be realistic about the change. One of my favorite stories is, you know, I was walking out in the country. We live kind of in a rural part of Colorado. And I walked past this farmer and he had a dog. And the dog is sitting in the front of the yard and he's just screaming and howling in pain. And I look over and it's because he's sitting on a really sharp nail. And I'm like, oh man, your dog, what's going on here? And he's like, yeah, I'm sitting on a nail. It's said, okay. So the next day I walk by, mm-hmm. same farmer, same dog, same nail. Dog screaming in pain. I'm like, wow, man, what's it? You're not helping your dog. He's like, yeah, I know. He's sitting on a nail. Next day, walk by, dog screaming in pain. And so I'm like, mm-hmm. you've got to tell me what's going on here. This dog with the nail, he's in pain. What's going on? I said, well, he'll get up when it hurts enough. And most managers are in a place where all they have to do to stop the hurt is choose to stand up. And the same thing with the dog, right? All they have to do is choose to stand up, and they will howl in pain until they say, mm-hmm. I'm going to make a choice to stand up. And so for many yeah. managers, it is, oh, but so, oh, but so, oh, but so, until the pain is enough. And that pain could be, hopefully it's not physical pain in a professional setting. It could be, you know, you're not hitting your metrics. You're seeing higher turnover than you want to. You know that it's an uncomfortable and unhappy environment to come into. Whatever it is, it will take until you get there. So you just have to have a manager who says, okay, yes, the tasks are always going to be so important or have to be done so quickly. That cycle will continue until I choose to get up and do something about it. And it's about getting to that point and getting them mm-hmm. to see that.
As people move from micromanagement to leadership, is there a place for micromanagement in the leadership paradigm?
You know, there is a place for the behavior that is often defined as micromanagement. Mm. So this is that highly directive, highly involved type behavior. So perhaps you have an instance where you've got an individual who's learning a brand new skill, never done it before. You're an expert. They've never done it. And they are growing and developing into being able to do that skill effectively. In that instance, it may be quite appropriate to be very directive and say, the outcome we want is this. The way on your first time going through, we're going to do this is A, B, C, D. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be there right along with you every step of the way as you are learning.
Yeah.
So think about folks who jump out of planes, you know, with parachutes, they're skydiving for fun. They're going to have their first couple jumps, somebody saying, you do this, you pull here. Right. I'm going to be right there with you the whole time, right? First couple jumps, you do that. Second jump, third jump, fourth jump, that instructor is going to slowly start stepping back that level of direction and support so that you can eventually grow into being able to do it on your own. So that behavior is appropriate in the beginning. And when both parties have agreed that that's what's needed, it becomes inappropriate when it doesn't step back and allow that individual to then start saying, okay, I'm going to start defining the how and the way on my own. So absolutely appropriate in the beginning, not forever.
The thing is, you have some people, when you look at it from a power perspective, right? Some people prefer to have power over someone else. So releasing can be more difficult because of what their intentions are. It's back to intentions now. When the intentions are around building a power base or building up power so they can have more status or whatever it is, what they think is the way to be. Mm-hmm. How does power and control come into play? Because sometimes they don't allow that stepping back mm-hmm. and release mm-hmm. because there's something else, or it could be fear. That's causing it, whatever the cause is, but it's not always as simple. It could be a kind of a complex kind of layering of intentions.
Oh, that you've used my three favorite words, which is power, control, and fear. And those three things often end up in the same boat, right? Mm. So I would argue that folks who are holding super tight to that micromanagement, highly directive, highly involved behavior, they do not, in fact, have power. They have control. And control and power are two different things. Mm-hmm. Power would be the ability to say, I know I've developed you, given you the skills, given you the confidence and the ability to go do something even greater than I could do on my own, because I've created a team that is more powerful than I would have been on my own. That's powerful. Control is, I'm going to hold on to this as tight as I can for as long as I can. And that is a fear-based behavior. That behavior comes from, I'm afraid of what will happen if I relinquish control. And in some instances, that fear is correct. Like if you've got a toddler, you don't let them run into the water because there's a legitimate fear there, right? However, if you know that that individual can swim, then you've got to have the power and the faith to allow them to get into the water. So there's a difference between power and control. And when you have a manager who appears to be just unwilling to step outside of that highly directive behavior, it's probably because they're afraid of what the outcome will be. And they've got to do some of that work to understand, what am I afraid of? What is the negative outcome that could happen here? And then what do I want to do to try to fix it? If I truly have a valid and legitimate fear that someone doesn't have the skill set, okay, let's build them a development plan to get them there so I can work.
Yeah.
But we've got to be willing to get into it and be real about what the difference between power and control is.
Absolutely. As a final question, you've given us so many nuggets in this conversation. What's one thing that you'd like to leave with our listeners that they should remember when it comes to, you know, checking themselves to figure out, am I micromanaging? Or should I kind of release this control? What's something they can remember when they're in that space?
This is something I say to all managers, and I think it's one of the most important takeaways. If you have the privilege to lead people, whether it's one person or 10,000 people, whatever your context might be, if you are the manager of a team, you are dinner table conversation. And what I mean by that is most families do what my family does. We sit down to dinner, and the first question we ask is, how was your day? And that will be answered with, I got to work on this amazing project. You wouldn't believe what my manager said about how great I did on this task. I am so excited about this new person who's joined my team, whatever it is. Or, I work for such a jerk, and he wouldn't let me have my own ideas. He shut me down, whatever it was, right? You are reviewed every night across somebody's dinner table. It happened last night and it will happen again tonight. And so for managers, just to take the moment and say, if I'm being reviewed over somebody's meatloaf, what do I hope is being said to their spouse, in front of their children, and as they review the way that they are spending their life, which is what they're talking about at their dinner table? And if you have the courage to ask yourself that question and give yourself some honest answers, it can be a great insight into, am I leading the way that I want to and intend to? And if I can't possibly answer that, if my answer is I have no clue, okay, that's the place to start. There you go.
Yeah. With that, Summer, I'd like to say thank you. There's so many, pieces of wisdom that you shared with us. And your insights will certainly support our audience with their own transformation, with their own questions about whether or not they're a micromanager. I think you mentioned earlier that you offer a free micromanagement assessment. And I think if you can just say where they can find it so that they can really take accountability.
Absolutely. So the assessment is on my website. It's completely free, no strings attached. My website is leader-shop.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn. If you find me on LinkedIn and DM me, I'm happy to send that to you and make sure that you get it, because I think it's just a great, really easy, few questions, great way to just assess yourself and start thinking about, where am I landing for my people?
Fabulous. This has been Yvette Bethel with Summer Davies, and we would like to thank you for taking the time to join us on Evolve.
Thank you for listening to Evolve, Reinventing Leadership, Building Freedom Cultures. Learn more about our proprietary trust, leadership, and culture courses and certifications at the IFB Academy. You can check them out at organizationalsoul.learnworlds.com.